You got to press it a second time. No, we got it.
Yeah, I think we didn't get any of that.
It's okay. I'll do it again. Told you needed a producer.
No.
Oh, God.
But I've been looking at that blinking. I was like, I get blinking means working.
Well, the first thing we should do is let our listeners know that we just did a 10-minute interview that we didn't record.
Yes. So I have, you, man, I gave away everything.
So I have.
I told you all my secrets. I can't even remember what I said. It was so.
And that means I have. Tingling. That means I have 5 minutes left now.
No. We'll extend. We'll give you an extension.
Well, God, we're with Jack White. I'm Nick Harcourt. It's 88.5 KCSM. We're in the Four Seasons. Fortunately, I've met this guy a couple of times, so I think I might be able to get away with this. But I was saying, the interview is going to be somewhat different, but we'll cover some of the same ground. I was looking at some old magazines.
Yes.
And I found a 2003 Spin magazine that gave their 10 best albums of the year, and Elephant by the White Stripes was their number one. And as I was looking at that, this was before we'd agreed to do this interview, I was thinking, wow, things take time. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. People can be around a long time. Sometimes when I'm talking to young musicians, for example, they're like, mm-hmm. I want it now. I got to get it now. Yeah. They have this sense of like, it's all about now. But things take time. You were telling me that, you know, you made your first solo recordings when you were like 13 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's 20 odd years later that your solo record hits number one. So number one, things take time.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
You know, people told me there was Janet Weiss, who was a drummer from Sleater-Kinney. She played with us the other day with her band Quasi. And she was saying, you know, in a roundabout, I'm paraphrasing her, but she was like, you know, the White Stripes, it happened the way we all want things to happen. People didn't connect with the White Stripes till our third album. It was very natural the way things built up. We had a band. We were in our own hometown. We got a little of a following. We started to play Milwaukee, Chicago, get on a nationwide tour a couple of times, put out a couple of albums, and then people started to dig it. We really were always moving forward and stepping up the staircase. And then to not have a number one record like you're saying till now, it makes you feel like I'm still stepping up the staircase and moving forward instead of just getting up on some platform and staying level for the rest of my life, which would be, to me, just death. I mean, I don't know, I would be so ashamed of myself to not feel like I'm moving forward. It doesn't mean moving, becoming more, whatever, quote-unquote, successful means to people or whatever. It just means, as an artist, moving forward where you think you're getting to new places, covering new ground, giving yourself a new challenge to overcome.
Well, you've always challenged yourself. I mean, I obviously don't know you pre White Stripes as a man, but musically, as I've seen you evolve through the White Stripes, through the Raconteurs and the Dead Weather to this, you obviously feel the need to challenge yourself every time you take on a project, right?
I think so. I think we're all kind of bored when people are like, say, like you were in a famous band and you become a solo artist and you have just five guys behind you that nobody cares about their character or personalities, and it's just played just like the record, and you go off and play arena shows, and that's that. I mean, there's no life to that. There's no electricity to that. There's no zest to it. There's no lust in it. It's just all, that just seems like the most boring things that I could write down on a piece of paper.
Well, what keeps it exciting for you?
I think it's because you have to trip yourself up. You have to push yourself down and try to overcome obstacles. It would be very easy right now, like, to say, like, okay, hey, somebody, go find me all the best players. Just go out and find me the best players and put a band together for me. And I'm going to go out and here's the songs I want to do and make sure they learn them. And let's go out there. All right, guys, ready? And you guys are rehearsed and we play them and I stand in the spotlight in the middle and sing them and the show's over. We play some arenas and sell a lot of tickets or whatever. I think that's what a lot of people make that choice. And that's just so boring and just full of bull. I don't know what to think about all that. The first thing I thought is, if I'm going to go out and play these shows under my own name, there has to be something I need to overcome. There has to be some challenge. In the White Stripes, there was just nothing but challenges. There's just the two of us. Nobody else is making any melodies on stage but me. I have to come up with a lot of stuff to keep this show going. Making it hard for that. And that makes me work, makes my brain work. So this is the same way. The one thing I thought to do was, if we had two bands, if we brought two bands on tour, that'll really make me work and think about it.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it. I mean,
it's not a smart business.
So, two bands, the boy band, the girl band, What's the difference? There's got to be a different energy when you're playing with a bunch of testosterone or a bunch of, you know, female energy.
Sure. I played with it in the studio when we worked on the album, and I thought if we went on stage, if we went on tour, and I had two bands of mixed bands, like boys and girls in each band, you wouldn't really be able to tell the difference as much in the crowd. You'd be like, well, was that the same band we saw last time, honey? It would be like that, you know? It'd take a super fan to know, maybe. So I thought, well, the one way to really know the difference in the crowd is if they're all girls or if they're all guys. It'll instantly say, oh, this was not the band I saw last time we heard. Or my friend saw them play and it was all guys when he saw them. That idea. And then you have the preconceptions of femininity and masculinity and what that all means. And then it starts to come down to individual personalities. Now I care about this female drummer, this male fiddle player, this keyboard player who's a girl. What does that all mean now? Because what it could have been is just five guys standing behind me that no one cares about, who just are my backing band, you know. And it's Jack White's show.
Well, you're challenging yourself, obviously, but you're also challenging the audience's preconceived ideas.
Exactly, yeah, and our own, the band's own preconceived ideas. You know, the girls, for instance, play a show, and the guys are watching it side of stage. They're going to play maybe tomorrow, maybe they won't. But they may the next show that they play, they've watched the girls play the same songs in a different way. It's inspiring to them. It's inspiring to me. It's inspiring to the girls that they know the guys are watching them. And vice versa. It's a lot of stuff that would not normally happen on a tour in a live scenario. Definitely things I've never experienced, and I've been in a lot of bands, and I'm experiencing a lot of new things, which is makes me feel good about still doing this after so long.
You know? When do you decide which band's going to play?
At breakfast.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And what makes that decision for you? Is it just a random thing?
I started doing that. We did this White Stripes tour of Canada. And we had a free show. We wanted to do a free show in every city we went to. And I thought, if I tell the production manager 2 weeks ahead of time, I want to play a bowling alley when we get to Saskatoon or whatever city it is, then they'll call, they'll set it up. The people at the bowling alley will tell their friends. It'll turn into this whole thing. The local news will be there if it's a small town, whatever. All those things that could possibly happen given time. And something bad will happen too. Like, you know what? We couldn't get the permit. You know, now it was cool, but now so many people are coming down now. They have to shut it. We need to move this to a venue or something like that. But if you say it at breakfast, we're playing a bowling alley in 3 hours. Tell the crew. Everyone's excited. The energy level is insane. Uh-huh. The fans find out about the internet. They're rushing to try to find where to go, to find out this place. Energy is totally different, and it gets pulled off. We did a show on a bus. We had the fans come to a bus stop, and the bus picked, and the guy just, Lala's standing there, the tour manager said, get on the bus. And they have no idea where they were going. They got on a bus, and at the next stop was me and Meg. You could hear a bus of screaming people, screaming, driving towards us. Me and Megan standing by ourselves at a bus stop in Canada, and there's a bus of screaming people coming towards us. So that's what I was talking about. Like, so if you decide at breakfast who's playing tonight, that's the better scenario to be in than to say it a week ahead of time and give everyone a schedule. Okay, you guys are playing here.
Sure.
Tuesday, you're playing in Vancouver, and Wednesday, you're going to play. Also, and then it would be sort of a thing where like, well, since I'm not playing on Thursday, can I just meet you guys in L.A.? You know, and then
no, you got to be with us on the road because you never know.
We're all in the family. You don't know what's going to happen. And now that's the energy level we live in. So that's a better place.
I want love to roll me over slowly, stick a knife inside me and twist it all around. I want love to grab my fingers gently, slam them in a doorway, put my face into the ground. I want love to murder my own mother and take her off to somewhere.
What does this bring to the songs? I mean, obviously you're playing...
Absolutely nothing. No, it's...
Well, obviously you're playing material from your career here, you know?
Yeah,
So what does this bring to the songs? How do they change every day?
It brings a lot of new elements to it that it wouldn't have it if it would just been like five guys and we had just had it rehearsed and tried to do a tight version of it. And a lot of these songs, I don't know how to do a tight version of them, especially when they're White Stripes songs where it was just me and Meg. I was doing so many weird things because I didn't have to follow anybody else's cues or stay in tune with anybody. I could do a lot of wild things on stage and change the song midstream, change the tempos and stuff like that. So that's why I talked to him about it. I was like, guys, I need to be the person I am in the White Stripes with six people behind me and with me. It's a better way to put it. Can you guys do it? Can I look at the keyboard player, change the song, hold my hand up, and we can all understand where we're going right now? Can we do this? Because I've never done it. I could do it with Meg. It's easy. Two people, big deal. You stop a song and you start a new one. But with six people, can we do this? I mean, James Brown could do it because they'd be to rehearse the shit out of it, you know, for hundreds of hours, and you'd get fined if you made a mistake. That was that way of doing it. But can we do this loosely where no one gets mad? You know, I'm changing the song. Let's make it work and get excited by it and inspired by it. And it's been working. It's been feeling really good. It could have been a disaster, and that was the dangerous part about all of it. You know?
But it's definitely flying by the seat of your pants every night.
It's better for me. I that's where I like to work and create, and where it could be a disaster, it could fall apart.
Yeah, yeah.
And no set list, and maybe some people don't think that's a big deal to have no set list, but it is a big deal when you're on stage, when you don't know what's going on next.
Well, you have to give yourself the opportunity to screw up.
Yeah.
Because exactly. Out of that,
the crowd can smell it and they sense it and they know it. They're with you. They don't know what's going to happen next because we don't know what's going to happen next, and that's a different kind of show, you know. Then going to see an arena show where the pyrotechnics go off at song 3 and the lights change to purple at song 5 or whatever.
So when you hit this place, obviously, where you have a number one record, and we talked about that in the interview that we didn't record, but very quickly, what does that mean to you to actually look at the back of Rolling Stone and see number one?
It's bizarre, you know. I guess you've been, it's sort of an iconic thing, that last page in Rolling Stone, you know, Billboard or something, you know, you look at since you were a kid, and I would assume that I would have assumed as a musician I would never see my name in there, in that spot, in number one. But it felt good in a way. It felt like something got accomplished. I guess the idea that, wow, it baffles my mind. Anyone gives a damn about that. I would assume this music that I'm interested in is something that not a lot of people would like. Maybe I would assume you had to be a pop star, like pop music, to get to that spot. And so I don't know. I guess there's all those things. It means something, but it doesn't mean something.
Well, it's interesting to me that for a long, long time, people have been ignoring the blues.
Mm.
And a lot of people don't even realize the blues influence in a lot of the music that they listen to.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, this music is back. Even though people are not calling it the blues. I mean, we can look at your own music. Black Keys, we can look at people like Adele. I mean, singers that are out there that are really coming from that place right now. It seems to be a moment where this music is in the forefront. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, when the White Stripes were sort of getting into the mainstream, we thought, well, that's the downfall of this band. They're not going to care about us in a couple months because, for God's sakes, this is the blues we're playing. This is the 21st century now. They're not going to really, once they figure out that's what's going on here, once they get through the different aspects of the White Stripes aesthetic, you would assume that once they discover this is the blues, they might not be interested. But we were also had the benefit that people had been sold this white boy, Stratocaster, Blues Brothers, Beale Street, Hollywood, blues bar bullshit for so long that became quote unquote the blues to people, that I woke up this morning with a pair of sunglasses on or something, and that's not the blues at all. And so that's why I think it works, because it shows what a cartoon that idea is. And I don't mean about authenticity, I just mean about the idea that's just a facade of what, you know, of what the blues really is.
Well, what is it to you today? I mean, what inspires you today to write music like this?
You're trying to get to the truth, you know. You're trying to get to the truth, and there's a difference between that and authenticity. I think in my mind, it is, as a writer, you're trying to get someplace that you know you feel strongly about, like you were writing on this paper, the Constitution, when you were writing this lyrics down for this song. That it's the truth, that this is the statement that cannot be altered and needs to be set in stone, that you have to feel that way as a songwriter, that strongly about what you're putting down, speaking out of your mouth, putting it on paper. And that is the blues. The blues is the truth. They're synonymous words to me. And that's what your goal is. You know, your goal is to be the blues, not say, I'm gonna write a blues song in the style that people like blues music. And you say, no, my goal is to, this will become the blues in my mind. I guess it's a difficult thing to say out loud. I don't know how to say it.
This collection of songs that are on this record, how do you feel you've evolved to this point as a songwriter and a producer who is prepared to put his name on a project, on a collection of songs?
Before, I wouldn't say, like, if it was just when all I had time to do was work on White Stripes records and I was producing that band, it's not that big of a deal to produce the White Stripes for me. It's not that much. It's not that complicated.
Is that because you can sort of hide behind it a little bit?
It was just so simplistic. It's so simple.
Right.
I mean, you could do it with three microphones and two tracks, and they're not that hard. The idea is set in stone as soon as you start, like the main picture, like what the room is, how many microphones you have, how many tracks you're using, and you're kind of done producing at that point. Yeah. But now, having Third Man Records for the last few years and working on all these 45s, Blues Series records, spoken word records, and especially Wanda Jackson's album specifically, because I worked with a 10 to 12 piece band in a lot of those songs where I became an orchestrator of other musicians. And I didn't realize, I'd done this with a lot of bands, produced bands, but never actually orchestrated a big band like that. So when it came time I was working on Blunderbuss songs and I was orchestrating, you know, 7-8 people sometimes, I'd never done that with my own music. I'd never done that. I'd always been in bands. Like if I'm on the Raconteurs, the four of us are playing. I don't tell Patrick what drum beat to play, really. LJ to bass line, they're just playing with my song, or me and Brendan's song. So this was me telling people who showed up to work, tell me what to play. You know, like,
that's a whole different
thing. It's a different way of making music, yeah. You're not just a songwriter or performer anymore. I'm producing and directing and orchestrating all at the same time. And those are words. Those are just words to describe it, but that's all the kind of stuff you're doing. You're creating this stuff on the fly. Sometimes I'd say, all right, it's in the key of C, and I'd walk around the room and say, okay, here's the melody, here's what I want to do the piano, here's what the bass can do, and try this drum beat in double time. Let's try it, go. You know, writing, using those people as your instruments, you know, like, because they're willing to be a part of that idea. For a long time I thought, oh, that's egotistical, and it's all about people, and say it's controlling, and you're telling people what to do. Forget it, man. I need to do that. Like, this is my song. I've always been denying myself this, that I can't have it exactly the way I imagine it in my brain. I've always been working with other people and letting them contribute and not saying anything. And I was like, well, why can't I finally let myself do this? I mean, Jesus, I've been doing this for so long. So that was a big present to give myself, to say, like, have it exactly the way you imagined it with whoever you can get to play it as best as they can. And that's... crazy enough, it's like day one for me. It's starting all over again. So I am completely invigorated by that idea.
Yeah, when you touch my hand and talk sweet talk, I got a knocking in my knees and a wobble in my walk, and I'm trembling.
So when you hit this place, obviously there's a certain amount of visibility and success comes with having a number one record outside of all the cool groovy kids that might have known you before.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on tour now, obviously, with these bands. Where are you at with all this? I mean, it's got to be a good place to be.
It feels really good, because especially the two band idea, I was very, very concerned before we went out that this might not last a couple weeks and I have to rearrange this whole thing and get one band out there of people that we can get somewhere. But it's taken on a whole new life now, and I've been very lucky, because now would be the time to say, okay, that was an expensive little experiment. Whatever, the good pros and cons, but it's all been pros, man. I mean, just I can't think of anything negative about it right now, and I hope it stays that way, you know, because I'm getting a lot out of it, because I'm in places I've never been before live, from the recordings already, but also live. I've never been to these spots before, so I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. It's when you don't know if you're doing what you're supposed to do, that's a dangerous place to be.
Well, how do you know it? Tell me how you know that.
Because you identify in small ways, and some of them are ridiculous and some of them are arbitrary, but you identify in small ways what's working. You have to figure these little cue points out, the tone in someone's voice when they said that was a good show, you know, their body language, if they actually meant that or they're just saying it, or the crowd response, different volume levels of applause, a laughter at a certain moment in the song.
Do you really zero in on that
stuff? You have to think of all of that. I've never let other people just do that work for me. I've always taken on all that responsibility. You know, I saw Pokey Lafarge play with us last night, and he's really good at that. I mean, he's got a four-piece acoustic band to play in front of a couple thousand people, and he had their full attention and full applause, and playing music that's, you know, someone might say that's from 90 years ago. But people are fully interested in it because he knows how to pick out the moments to do certain things when and where. And when you don't have a set list, when you work with no set list, you have to know it's not a good idea to play Steady As She Goes right now. It's a better idea to play that later on. Right now, you should play something acoustic and bring people down for a second. That way you can build them right back up and then take it away from them. You have to think of all those little cues all the time. So it's very much like doing a stand-up comedy act or a vaudeville thing where you're working off of the crowd's cues. So those are little moments where you connected and you tried something you took a risk and it paid off. You know you accomplished something. You know you got someplace new. Because that's not the same as saying, this is the set, this worked. We played this at five different shows and that works as the last song and this works as the first song in the encore. We know those work. So don't stray from the plan. That works. That's easy. That's the easy way to do it. It'd be easy to go out and say, play this, and end with Seven Nation Army and you're done.
Sure.
You know, like that would be the smart move.
I'm guessing we're not going to see you in any stadiums anytime soon.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes, that's another thing about showbiz. Like, once you get past a certain amount of people in the crowd, you start to lose intimacy and it starts to become strange. It's like we played in a seated theater the other day. And the vibe of people sitting down in comfortable chairs was totally different the night before. People standing up, you know, and general admission. And you have to work harder. We had to come out with guns blazing to get them to wake up. You know,
well, they're all just sitting there, like, relaxing.
Yeah, it's like they're watching a movie. Yeah. They're getting ready to watch a movie. You know?
So one last question as we finish up. I mean, you're in the middle of this, obviously. The album's out. You're touring it. You're going to have a busy summer. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can't answer this question, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. How is this experience changing you as a man?
Mm. It's made me realize there's new things that are possible for me, because after being in this many bands since I was a kid, you know, a couple of years ago, I was starting to think, man, I don't know if I can make up any new ideas. And maybe the new ideas are from genre of the new styles of music that I didn't grow up inside of. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what Skrillex and those people are doing and how it's connecting with people.
Well, how do you see that world, though?
I don't know. It's a bit of a mystery to me. I don't know how. I listen to it and sometimes wonder what people are getting from dance music. You know, like older dance music, I seems to make more sense for some reason, but the newer dance music, it's very hard for me to understand. Like, wow. But I also see that some of it's disposable, that people don't care about it 6 months later.
Sure.
And in the world that I have come from, you can have, like, say, country music. Like, if you're a fan of Garth Brooks when you're 20 years old, you're probably a fan of Garth Brooks when you're 80 years old. I mean, those guys are just so loyal to death, and they hold on to those albums, and it means something to their lives and all that stuff. Sometimes rhythm, when it's just rhythm-based music, it can just be disposable. So it's a dangerous thing. Sometimes I wonder about the danger of living in that. Sometimes it's enticing to me, like, wow, what a dangerous place to live, to try to, like, make sense of that and keep it going for a long time. That'd be hard to do. So that's kind of enticing sounding myself. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I just didn't grow up inside of it.
So no Skrillex remixes anytime soon.
maybe. I don't know. It's no diss. But I mean, he's you know, obviously him and other people like him are accomplishing something that I think is very difficult. you know.
But very quickly back to the question: how is this changing you as a guy?
It's making me think that there's still things that I can do that I haven't done yet. That's a cliche kind of sentence to say, but honestly, when you're in bands for that long, you start thinking, oh man, I don't know. Like, I was in a two-piece band. Is there anything left for me that I could try to figure out on stage that makes sense?
But that's as a musician. I'm talking about a guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
you mean like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're one and the same to me. I don't even know any difference anymore. I don't know. They're the same person. I don't even know anymore how what's different. I know, like, when I, as a family, I have kids and you know, wife and home, things like that. That stuff is all just a taste for me. I can sit down and taste and pretend this is a relaxed, settled life, and this is what it's like. And I don't have that anymore. I can't have that as picking to be an artist for my life. I cannot experience that in a full 100% level ever again. It's not a possibility for me. I gave myself away a long time ago. There's a sadness to that, but there's also a real big positivity to that, is because that I will find fulfillment in hundreds of different ways instead of just one or two ways. It's hard to explain that, I guess. And it doesn't sound like you're not having a better life than other people, like happier life, but you're experiencing life in a hundred different ways.
Well, it sounds like you're a multidimensional being, which
you know. I think I can't have a choice. I think I've never had a choice on any of that stuff, man.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's great. Yeah.
Good to see you.
Thank you. It's great to see you too.
Thank you.